Hello, Jay. How are you today?
Very well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Now, I've got my speaker on. Is it better for me to take that off?
You sound wonderful as it is.
Okay.
Because if I'm on the line, you're on the air.
Okay.
Well,
Great.
we're pre-recorded, but you know what I mean. It
Got
is
it.
wonderful to speak to you again. How is everything? How is the show going? Congratulations. You got Jilted to Perfection was one of the leaders of the New York New Works Festival over the summer. Wondrous reviews, marvelous houses. I hear it was tear-jerking. I hear it was musically gorgeous, the whole works. And of course, what happens? It's coming back in one of the more opulent cabaret spaces of New York at the Triad.
Right.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Oh, I'm so excited about it because in this expanded version, it's about three times longer. You can only do a little over 20 minutes of a piece. So I
Right.
had originally designed it as a mini musical, and then to expand it into this larger format has been so fun because it's given me an opportunity to get a lot of the ironies of this relationship and all of the comedy, of some of these fun things, and then some more of these gorgeous melodies and heart-wrenching situations that we were in, but not overdone. We've got a really fun balance of both of those things. And it's been so fun for me to find some different kinds of pieces to do. Like, I never thought that I would be doing something that sounded like a trek out in the mountains, but I've got a piece that's a whole 8 minute scene about this camping trip that's an allegory of our lives here in Park City and how everything kind of goes wrong, but we've got all of this excitement about our new lives here.
Do you have other performers in the show, or is it just still?
Yes, I've moved it out of it's still quite a narrative style where I'm singing and playing and acting from the piano, but I have three scenes now that are involving an ensemble cast. One is basically a dance that is called the Four Divorce Mambo. And it's a dance to describe rather quickly the history of the character of Fred, who is my husband, his past life and his four marriages and what happened with his career. So they mark the different marriages mark the activity of his acting and teaching career.
Holy mackerel, four marriages before you?
Yes, I was his fifth wife. He always said I was his favorite wife.
A duh. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, as much as you have been you've been mentioned many places before this, for the readers who don't know, readers, I keep remembering that this is recorded. For the listeners who don't know the show, who don't know Jilted to Perfection, give us a quick synopsis of what we're going to see.
Okay, so Jilted to Perfection is basically about a divorced Mormon mom who fights against her culture and security when she meets a Scientologist actor and director who joyfully takes risks to live his dreams with the woman that he knows is his soulmate. And so that this clash of religious cultures and backgrounds is really quite funny for a couple that really ended up kind of rubbing against those two different backgrounds, and yet knowing that their life together was just so full of joy and productive activity between the two of them.
That's wonderful. And if we stay on the subject of religion, this sounds like it's a really flawless parable about what true love is.
I believe it is. I think that love, it transcends culture and religion, even though religion and culture have so much to do about our daily walk and the way that we process our events in our lives, that love is the glue that kind of puts that all together. And in a way, love in relationships tends to be a microcosm of really what we're looking for as a whole civilization, is that a truly successful civilization is one that's able to meld differences in religion and culture into one kind of a civilization where we're all kind of getting along with each other and functioning well.
There you go. I was going to say it's rather fascinating because it's not so much that you're saying, you know, religions come together, but sometimes the obstacles that religion or spirituality provide end up becoming the things we have to overcome to reach that love. So you've given us this whole parable here, which is marvelous.
Well, and then also those differences that we have are the things that we learn from. And as actors, we're really taught that we need to assume a variety of different viewpoints. And everybody knows as an actor that if you have a critical viewpoint of the character that you're playing, that you can't represent that character really well, and that it hurts the drama of life. So as people, we all, and from an acting background, we know that we need to understand the viewpoint of other people's background and what they're looking at from one moment to the next. And in so doing, it helps us to become more compassionate and loving, understanding, and to actually get along with each other.
Now you speak very well, and that's my perfect lead-in. You're not just a performer. You're not even just a composer. You are a celebrated educator. You are an opera singer. You have a resume that make people blink. Tell us about Miss Cook. Tell us about Deborah Cook.
Well, you know, I started out just loving playing the piano as a kid, and nobody ever had to tell me to practice. Music was just, you know, something that I just adored and wanted to just keep doing it. And I found that I was always singing. And so, you know, that seemed to be a natural fit for me. And so I pursued that in college, and right away after college was teaching at a university, and I've had 20 years of university teaching both in a music department and in a theater department, where it was an actor training program where I was teaching singers how to act and sing at the same time, and to make that a viable opportunity for their career. But my background as a performer was that I got on early with Utah Opera Company and sang repertory roles with them for about 7 seasons, and then got an agent, went back to New York, and moved there after my first marriage with my 2 little kids. But I didn't have any alimony or child support. I was sort of all on my own, and so I had to figure out how to make this idea of a career work. So I saw some of my colleagues that had other businesses and things going on while they were having successful careers. And so I did the same. I started a real estate consulting firm doing property tax reductions for big industrial companies and properties and commercial properties all over the United States. And that tended to be a pretty good fit for a while, until that sort of ate up my soul. And realizing that I was starting to die inside because of this corporate work that I was doing, I cashed out of that business and went cold turkey back into performing. And that's about the time that, you know, I ended up getting some attention from some even more serious agents about the work I was doing, and had just finished my first debut singing at Avery Fisher Hall, which is now Geffen Hall.
Right.
Bring Some Messiahs there, and then ended up just, you know, leaving and marrying Fred, which is part of what the musical is about, is this huge decision as my career is taking off in New York, of getting married and for what I thought was going to be the good for the family, moving to LA and sort of restarting all over again, because my agent was very upset with me. He knew that out in LA I'd have very few opportunities to be singing at that level.
Oh, and did you, when you moved to LA, what, how'd it go?
Oh, he was absolutely right.
I just
had a few, you know, small little orchestra things, but I wouldn't change it because what that gave to me as an actor was priceless. Because in my life with Fred, he being such a great actor and educator, I was so exposed to that part of the industry that I would never really want to change it, because it was instrumental in my development as an artist, even though in my development of my career it was not. So there's a difference.
My wife always says, you know, a good actor must have full tanks. They must have experience. They must have life, so that they can access different things when they play a role. So L.A. for you was sort of to fill your tanks.
Definitely, because up to that point, I must admit, I was the typical hang ten and just sing as loud as you can kind of singer, and pan the audience and paint it all by numbers with emotion. And I would get good reviews and everything because I was in an operatic world, but I wasn't in a theater world, mm-hmm. where it's got to be more genuine than that. And so my time in LA was really a great reset as a performer.
Do you think that's changing in the opera world? I read many articles about that the days of, you know, standing at the edge of the stage and singing is sort of disappearing from the opera world, that they too are trying to build characters within even roles that are hundreds of years old. Do you find that the case in opera also?
Yes, I am totally finding that that's the case. And I'm finding that typecasting is really much more common now in opera than it used to be.
Uh-huh.
You used to be able to be 300 pounds and sing Aida gorgeously and everybody was going to be happy. But it's just not the case. It's not becoming the case anymore. Yes, I am kind of thin for an opera singer. I'm still, you know, 20 pounds too heavy for film and 20 pounds too light for opera. But
brilliant. Brilliant.
But at the same time, opera is becoming a much more visual and genuine kind of art form, and it's much more difficult.
That's great.
Because the skill required to sing opera vocally is pretty difficult.
Now this is a real sensitive subject here, because not spoiler alert, this is your husband has since passed,
right?
And so this is really a love letter about your relationship. And as much as we're giggling at the fact that, okay, this ex-Mormon mom and this ex-Scientologist are going to LA and then they're coming to New York, and it almost sounds like a sitcom, but this is a very deep subject for you. How was it to put this show together? What went through you when you were basically putting your life on paper?
Well, you know, Fred and I always felt like one of the magic parts of being a performer is the ability to achieve a vulnerability. And that's if you can create vulnerability, that's what draws an audience in, and that's what helps them to understand how it relates to their own life. It's sort of the magic, the little magic potion. And it's hard for actors to get that. It's a real pinnacle, I feel. And so one of the things is that I've never really been that afraid to be vulnerable. It's okay to be vulnerable. And that I love, I mean, of course, my love for Fred is really great, and I miss him so, so much. But I knew that if the universe would take him away from me, that there must be a reason that I'm still here. There must be a reason for my own development, or what it is that I'm supposed to be doing, or so for my own recognitions, or maybe for a sort of a mission to what it is that I have to give, that I needed to develop that and get on with it. And so part of that is trying to take the legacy that Fred has left behind, because his work is so profound and seminal. He has source material for not just for performers, but for just life in general, that if I could just try to encapsulate that in this story about him, that would honor him in a way, but it would also kind of help to propel that work forward in a way that might be more appropriate than me just starting with a book that I was thinking about writing of his materials, and it might give it a little bit more profile and understanding, because music and theater create an understanding in a different level that might be a little bit more accessible because of the gentility of that process.
Do you find your audience will live through your relationship much stronger when there it is musicalized on stage and they can see breathing souls talking about it as opposed to, you know, by the book?
Yeah, well, surely that's the intent, and that's the hope that we always have with art. And that people, because of the art, because of the way that it's presented, that they'll be able to latch on to that strength in the communication and relate it to their own lives.
How do you feel on stage when you do it? I've asked this of many performers who have done basically some portion of, if not their own autobiography on stage. I've asked an author recently where he did an entire play about him coming out of the closet, and he said to me, "I come out of the closet each and every time I see the play." How do you feel on there living your life once again?
It's a joy.
Oh,
I can't
brilliant.
Wait. I can't wait to do it.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that's the best explanation for me. And it's a responsibility. It's a responsibility. It's hoping that it's done in a way that's genuine enough that people will be okay with looking at it.
Do you get any flack? A former Mormon, a former Scientologist. Do you get any flack? Do you ever get a letter somewhere that says, "How dare you say this," or anything like that? Or is everyone just receptive?
No, not at all. And
oh,
you know
good.
I'm still LDS, and what was so wonderful about it is that the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saint Foundation actually did a matching grant for me on that first production in New York.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, there really isn't anything that's pejorative about either of the religions in here. It's really more about the clash between them. It's quite revealing about both of them, you know, about some of the things that are the mores or the practices or whatever that seem to be somewhat misunderstood or understood and controversial or problematic in our society. I get all of that, but nothing that's really pejorative, because that's not really my agenda.
Right. I didn't think it was. I figured you would not go there. I'm just wondering.
Right.
We're in a world of trolls. I wasn't sure if anybody decided to be indignant.
Right. And indeed, when I was in New York, I went over to the Scientology org over there and did the same thing when I was out in London. And I told them about my show and invited them to come. And when I was out in Ireland and met with some of the Scientologists at a performance expo there, and they were presenting some of their opportunities there for performers, I gave them my card and I said, I've got the show. I'd love to come out and do it for you. You know, because it's about a Mormon and a Scientologist. And the guy says, yeah, he says, I'd love to look at that. He says, I'm a Catholic and I'm here, you know, as a Scientologist, you know, help, you know. And so we'll see, you know, I could be totally wrong here and people might look at it and think that it's just really horrible what I'm putting out there. I don't know.
I refuse to believe it. I've not heard one negative at all. Robert Viagas, whose opinion I value, was lauding your praises on the show, and you've gotten nothing but sterling reviews. And frankly, even of that entire festival, there's only been like two or three shows of the entire festival that went anywhere, and yours is certainly one of them.
Oh, well, thank you.
And speaking of going places, okay, so you're at the Triad. You're at the Triad next week, which is wonderful. Yep. Where's it going from there? What's stage three? What's the next step?
Well, the next thing that I'm doing is that the Classical Singer magazine, who had done an article about this process, they're always very interested in singers who are able to both cross over or develop their own work. So they've asked me to do the mini portion of the musical at their national conference in Chicago in May over Memorial Day weekend.
Oh, that's stunning.
Yes. And so what we'll do is afterwards we'll have a little talk pack session about process, etc. But the cool thing about it is that I have a cast coming with me, because I have all of these students that qualified for a competition that's going on simultaneously at the competition at the convention, and so they will be doing some of the ensemble work that's involved in that smaller version of the show. And so I'm really excited. I get to use some of these really gifted students and at the same time give that version of the show.
If there's a lucky star, it's hanging over your show. I have not heard one time that you or anyone has said, well, the problem was, never. So this is somewhere even Disney should take notice of this. Now, you were in L.A. Are you thinking of making this a movie or something, or a video, or putting it to the big screen in some way?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I've had a couple of discussions with I had a discussion with somebody who was somewhat involved with LDS kind of distribution with an entertainment company, and you know, just talking about if he were to have a platform, something like Netflix and Google has now, and that, you know, that they have subscribers that they can now fund their own content, how this might be an episodic kind of thing that
right.
might work for that kind of thing. So I've just kind of tiptoed around having a couple of meetings with people about that kind of a thing, and also you know, sent it to a theater that's a local theater that's kind of looking for some content for another season, and we'll see what they think of it, you know, that kind of thing. So who knows where that will lead, but I think after I'm done with this, I might spend the summer sort of knocking around and just looking at a couple of those ideas.
Yeah, because I was gonna, when you said Netflix, it sparked in my brain. I see so many comedy specials, so many in one sort of productions that they're doing that are now part of different packages, and yours sounds ideal for something like this.
Well, you know, sometimes you find that reality is actually more crazy than your fantasies.
No, yeah.
And I left so many things out of this that, of course, you don't have time for in a small show, you know, that were just crazy things and funny things that have happened in our lives. And I think we all have those kind of things. It's just a matter of kind of mining them out
right.
and seeing that we all deal with this sort of crazy randomity of our lives.
Well, now if it's a series, you have plenty of opportunities to put them in there.
Right. Right. You would. Yeah. And so that would be the fun thing about looking at a series, is because you really could find a lot of material with this family that has had such a disparate experience and so much adversity that they could learn from.
I was going to say yours is this, again, if we're talking Lucky Stars, yours is this ideal parable. You had, you know, the plot line to this is such that people are going to go, oh, I could just imagine. And yet it turned out to be a joyous story. And even in the production of it, it turns out to be a joyous journey. And,
yes.
and so you're an inspiration to so many in terms of the arts on so many levels, not to mention life in general. Now you have one show next week,
mm-hmm.
and then hopefully, if the triad says this is gorgeous, would you come back in a month? Could you do that?
Oh yeah. Good. Yeah. I would do that if the triad said, yeah, I think we got something that, you know, that would work. And, indeed, I've been trying to sort of retool my life so that if I do have some opportunities, that I have some options to kind of go in that direction. So,
terrific.
And I'm very fortunate to be able to to even look at that, you know.
Excellent. So, yeah. Excellent. Deborah, it's a pleasure to speak to you again. It's a pleasure to hear that there are happy endings there out there in the world, no matter what.
Yeah.
And thank you for chatting with me. I look forward to hearing wondrous things about the show. And I will make sure all our listeners know exactly where they can get tickets to see it next week.
Thank you so much, Jay. I so appreciate all of the wonderful support that you've given me on this project. It's just been such a delight to be able to work with you and your organization. And I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart and just let you know that truly that joy is where it's at. That's the role of a performer, to experience joy and share it with others.
My pleasure. It was my absolute pleasure. Okay. Thank you so much. All the best.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon.
Ciao.
Bye-bye.